Okay. My name is Kate Meissner. I'm the Prison and Justice Writing Program Manager at PEN America. I'm sitting here with my friend Johnny Incapier, who is a advocate, activist, actor, public speaker, consultant, essentially can do anything you want to do. So look him up. He's pretty incredible. I think you'll find out today. We're talking about press freedom for Press Freedom Day. Johnny, are you ready to answer some questions?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Did I miss anything about you?
No, I think that's pretty right on point.
All right. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, you did.
All right. Okay. So first and foremost, I know that your story has a really interesting lens on media. So what is a piece of journalism that's had a profound impact on you?
I think there's quite a few pieces of journalism out there that has an impact on me, because I don't want to like mention any specific writers or anything like that, but I will say that there have been many writers as well as authors that have either written articles or books about the subject of forgiveness, the subject of mass incarceration, and the subject of really finding oneself. And most importantly, I would have to say liberty, freedom. You know, they all intertwine. They all have a relation with one another. And as artists or as writers, we also identify with each other because we learn to express some of these subjects in some shape or form towards what we believe in or towards who we're working for. And to me, those subjects itself has stood out to me, and it's a personal thing for me. And I think whenever we want to buy something in life, it's just not about your taste, how it fits well with you, how it looks good on you, but it's also why you like it. You know, you like it because that's you. It's who you are, you know, that makes you. And you're into that. You believe in that. And you support that. And I think...
that's a great way to also segue and open up. I know you travel the country really telling your personal story that hooks into these subjects. That's pretty profound and extraordinary and devastating and heartbreaking in many ways, of course, as well. Would you be open to sharing a little bit about your story and the media's role in your story? Because I know there was a lot of journalism created around you.
Sure. Well, I grew up as an immigrant coming from Colombia, South America. First initially living in Florida and then moving to New York. And my parents are hardworking immigrants, and we were taught like the best values from my parents as they best could provide as parents. You know, what parent doesn't want to teach their children the best? And we were definitely raised with a lot of love. There's no question about that. My parents were very loving towards me and my brother because there was only two of us. And we were also taught about incentives. You know, you have to work hard in life in order to be rewarded. You look for that incentive, you know. And so at the end of the day, you know, what happened to me, I never would have expected that coming into a country like this, or just not knowing enough about life at the age of 18, growing up as a B-boy, then all of a sudden trying to make it into what you want to call maybe the entertainment industry, whether it was acting or music, but mostly I was in the music industry at that time, to all of a sudden look at how the media can be utilized against me. Being arrested in 1990 for a homicide that I didn't commit, all because a group of individuals that I knew went to rob a family of Utah that were going out that night to eat after coming to New York to visit the tennis tournament, and to only find their son being stabbed and killed by one of them was a tragedy in itself for any mother. You know, my mother even cried for Brian Walken's mother because it was the case of Brian Walken. She thought about me. Mm-hmm. But if they would have taken her away from me, whether it would happen through that or anything else, could have been a car accident, it could have been anything. She just thought about his mother, and I identified with my mother's pain and identified with Brian Walken's pain as well. But I think what hurt me the most was being falsely accused for something that I didn't do. And then second of all, how the media just all of a sudden, you know, jumped on this case, utilized the notoriety, publicizing it all over to slander my image and my name, that truly wanting to investigate who I was, where I came from, and who my family was, to really find out, you know, if what was being said against me was true. They just went along with what the authorities were feeding them. You know, and who are the authorities in this type of situation was the police department. And it's sad. It's sad because there's a lot of people in power, in authority, that people trust or want to believe that they can trust, and they just falsify things. And for you to think that, you know, if you're a journalist, you know, you went to school to study how to come to terms with investigating the truth, to all of a sudden take someone's statement for word of mouth, because you were saying, oh, he's a reliable source. Why is he a reliable source? Because he works for the government? You're saying people in government don't lie? We see politicians lie all the time, don't we? But not to want to take or make the effort to investigate what the authority was saying and then just slander my name, I think that hurt me and it hurt my family a great deal, because a lot of my family's friends turned their back on my family. And when my family needed support for them and for myself, they didn't receive it. So there was a lot of hardship that came behind the slandering of this notoriety that I received from the case that all of a sudden I was associating with.
Yeah, it makes me think, too, about the responsibility of journalists. When we talk about freedom of press and Freedom of Press Day and really fighting for freedom of press, that we're also fighting for responsible press as well, right? That actually media has an incredible amount of power. So that is... it's really incredibly relevant and very harrowing the way that that you are able to share that through your own story. On the other side, after spending quite a long time in prison, wrongfully incarcerated, did the media play a role in also exposing your truth?
Yeah, so the interesting factor about that is that, you know, I was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison, and I have to just not... to correct you per se, but just to correct the norm of what we've been taught in speaking about someone that was that is innocent and was declared innocent afterwards by saying, hey, they've been wrongfully convicted, wrongfully accused. And I think that's a misnomer, because in most cases people have been intentionally convicted. When they find out the truth, whether it's through false confessions, misidentification, or DNA, you come to terms and realize, and there was so much evidence to begin with to show that there were a lot of people that had the knowledge about how the individual was innocent and they knew about it, so they intentionally still allowed him to be convicted and go through the system and spent a travesty of years in prison anyway. So that's why I say that's a misnomer, and it's really intentionally convicted and not wrongfully convicted. But in my case, when I was sentenced to 25 to life, it took 25 years to all of a sudden, you know, declare me innocent. 25 years. I spent all 25 years, and there was no guarantee that if I was not released by a judge who found me innocent, that I could have went to the parole board and still stayed in prison for numerous years behind that, because the laws in place are how parole works. That also is another subject that needs to be rectified. But for all of a sudden the media to be on my case on top of it again, because it was a very well-known case, and then claim their happiness, claim their joy, be so supportive of me. I think that maybe some of the reporters that were just stepping into the scene and learning about my case, they didn't know anything about my case and heard it for the first time, I would say that I genuinely believed them, because they're, one, just doing a job, but two, after finding about the real true factors that came out about my case and how I was declared innocent, they were truly happy for me. But for reporters that were still on the job 25 years ago and still reporting this case again to all of us and say, I'm happy for you now, it was a conflicting sense of a notion for me, because saying, does this person, is he really happy for me, or is he just doing it because, again, it's his job, you know, and he wants to show two sides. He's not trying to take sides with people, you know. So it was kind of weird. It was mixed emotions for me. But again, it proved to me that, you know, reporters didn't really investigate anything. You know, they were taking word of mouth of what people were said. A mistake happened to me in the beginning. Right? And that was my main thing with my attorneys, with everybody. I wrote numerous letters. Why didn't anybody bother to investigate about what happened to me, even if it was a journalist? Who was the one person that broke my case open? Guess who? A journalist who I consider to be a very, very dear friend of mine and a brother. His name is Bill Hughes. William, a.k.a. Bill Hughes, used to work for the Journal News in Westchester. And he's a professor of journalism in York College. And he cracked my case open because, for me, he was the only journalist that really took the time and the interest to want to investigate the truth of the matter in my case. No one ever else did. You know, you want to say you believe in journalism, that you respect journalism, right? And you want to make a career out of journalism. Yeah, who doesn't want to make a career? Yeah, but if you want to make a career, where's your ethics? Where does that come into play? Do you really care about making more of a salary for yourself, more of a name for yourself? You want to be a respected journalist in the New York Times, in the New York Daily News, in the Washington Post, in the New York Law Journal, rather than, you know, caring about what you were taught and being respected for that instead? That's a real reliable journalist in my eyes. You know, not just someone because the president of the United States gives interviews and he respects him, or the mayor of New York respects him as a journalist because he says, you know, he's so nice, he's not going to disrespect me, and he's going to ask me all the questions that I want him to ask me. No, be respected because you ask certain questions because you know you investigated it through all avenues and all sources to come to that conclusion. And Bill Hughes did that.
Tell me a little bit about how that all came to be. Also, by the way, the president, we know he's anti-freedom of press, as he's been proven. So we don't want to take his word anyway on journalists. Just joking with you. But how did you reach out to Bill? What made him hook into your story? And how did it break your case? What do you mean by that?
Well, the interesting thing is that I never reached out to Bill. I reached out to many. I wrote letters somewhere in one of my boxes that I brought home from prison, or I sent home from prison years ago. There were letters that I sent out to universities, college professors, law firms, clergy members, journalists of the press, just asking for people to look into my case and want to help out, make the effort. Nobody did. So I didn't give up. And interesting, a woman that I met in the theater program that I was involved with in prison, rehabilitation through the arts, she was my vocal coach, because I was casted for the play of West Side Story, and I was casted as Tony.
All right.
So she was my vocal coach, and, you know, we had workshops and the rehearsals, and one day she just said, you know, there's something about you that just stands out. You don't seem like the same average type of guy that everybody projects himself to be in here, and just don't look like you belong in here. You know, why are you here? What happened to you? And, you know, I told her, listen, we got to work. Talk about that another day. Let's just focus on what we got to do. Sure enough, behind my back, and I didn't know, she went along around asking people about me. And then all of a sudden, we touched the subject. She asked again. We spoke about, you know, what happened to me. And unbeknownst to me, she got in contact with a friend of hers that was a police officer, told that police officer about my case. And he said, I know the right guy. This is a job for Bill Hughes.
Wow.
So the police officer contacted her with the reporter from the Journal News at that time. And he came to visit me. And then immediately, you know, I didn't know this, but years later, he told me afterwards, after he was already working on my cases, I didn't believe Johnny. You know, because this was his first time looking into a case of someone that was in prison for something he didn't do. And he also didn't have any knowledge of this, because his forte was really looking into crooked judges and district attorneys, as well as police officers. So the relation of somebody that was incarcerated for something he didn't do was interesting enough to want to just want to meet me and see, you know, how or so he can do whatever he can do for me. But initially, he didn't believe me because he had no evidence, or I didn't have any evidence to prove to him that I was innocent. And it's hard to believe someone like that. But nonetheless, he stood on the case. He knocked on doors. He filed a full request to get information. And as he looked into it and looked into it, he started finding a lot of loopholes in my case, started raising more questions, and started realizing, you know what? Everything that Johnny told me, it seems that it is true, because I'm starting now find things that actually substantiate what he's saying. So it was because of him that attracted the attention of an ex-commissioner of the New York State Parole Division, the name of Bob Dennison, Robert Dennison, and the two of them together worked on looking into my case, and they found the evidence that actually got me free, that proved my innocence. So in this case, I have a whole lot of respect for journalism, but for him per se as a journalist, because I think in my eyes, it's like you tell somebody that's been in prison for something they didn't do. Do you really respect the judicial system? Do you respect police officers? First and foremost, the first answer most people will tell you is no, because they were the ones that put them in there to begin with and didn't even bother to find out whether they were innocent or guilty. Him as a journalist, he brought that, you know, hope or that sense of believing in the judicial system again for me in a lot of ways, and believing in journalism, because he was showing me that he was doing the right thing, you know. And wherever I go when I do public speaking, whether it's to a class of people that are going into law enforcement, they're going to be working for the district attorney's office, or even people that are looking to becoming journalists themselves, the most important focus that I really convey to them is the importance of being ethically true to what you're studying. You know, that's very important, because that could change someone's life. Because if you don't stick to that, all you're going to do is harm someone's life. You can slander somebody's life. You can destroy someone's life by reporting false information. And that's how important that is. How much time do you take to write an article? You should dedicate more time in investigating the subject matter of what you're writing.
Absolutely. This is a really powerful example, I think, of the power of media. And thinking about the question, next question here is, how have you seen journalism contribute to advancing social change? Well, your story is a clear case in point, right? You also referenced articles and journalists in the beginning who've written about issues connected to mass incarceration, exposing and bringing to light these conversations. It's interesting to think about your story and the real personalization of this idea of freedom of press, and also thinking about what it means for freedom of press to be, you know, in some ways threatened in the United States when the White House says, no press coming in here. and they want to, you know, Trump, etc., want to frame a narrative and have control over the press, and how dangerous that is, right? So it goes from the real personal level of your story of how the media on one end destroyed your life, and then on the other end saved your life, though wouldn't have needed to save your life, right, in the first place, if they didn't contribute maybe to how they painted you. So it's, I'm trying to kind of make this connection, I think, between the ethics of journalism and the importance of freedom of press.
You know, there's always going to be a lot of spin doctors out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it goes back to what I initially said. You know, the ethics in journalism is very important, because whether you become a publisher or editor, you know, your objectives as a journalist or the company that you're running, okay, changes for lucrative reasons, for political reasons. Who do you support? Who are your benefactors that support you? You know, is going to determine the guidance that you're going to provide to all the journalists that work underneath you. And all of a sudden, when that becomes your focal factor, there are no more ethics in journalism. You know, you're basically saying that you don't care what you write about, because all you care about is really is becoming successful financially or you know, a name, you know, an image. And it's sad, because we see that a lot. People speak about, you know, this paper being conservative, this paper being right wing, this paper being a leftist. But what happened to being respectful, to being liberal, not taking sides, but just reporting the truth?
Well, people have different perspectives on truth, right? Which is why you could see a story reported one way in a conservative paper and another way in a more quote-unquote liberal paper. So interestingly, when I think about you saying that, is that there is no way to be an ethical journalist if there's not freedom of press. Because you at least could compare two opinions, right? But if all we have is Fox News, let's say, all we have is the Post.
Listen, I'm not saying that when you report news, right, that you shouldn't stop believing in what you believe in, okay? What I'm just saying is that you should really limit how much of what you believe in is when you report the news.
I'm totally with you. I think I'm just sort of...
No. And I think a lot of people, and I think we probably don't have to mention this, because I think it's a given for a lot of people that know about what journalism is about, you know, but I'm just saying that I think we forget about what journalism should be about.
Mm.
Because people know what it's about, but they forget about it. And they don't seem to apply it, because we know that we all of a sudden become blinded, or we get tunnel vision now for looking at, you know, again, I have to mention this over and over, a successful journalist. What is it going to take for you to become a successful journalist? My interview with you right now, is this going to make you more successful in the company that you represent, or if you're working for the Daily News or the New York Times, whoever, or whatever Vibe magazine, you know? What is it going to make you successful? What do you believe in? What do you stand for? That's my whole point. We all know how news is reported. We know whether you're a conservative or liberal or not. But at the end of the day, people are not taking that initiative, okay, to put all of that to the side and just stick to the facts. And that is true journalism. That's what people forgot about.
And that's the power you're talking about, right? Amazing. I feel like we've sort of covered everything that I was thinking to ask without me having to ask it. What concerns you about the state of news media today? You laid that out very clearly.
But Kate, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
And I apologize. I sincerely do, because I know you're the one really interviewing me and doing this. But I just want to add one other thing. Journalism hurts. And let me explain myself. to me, right, journalism hurts so much because of what I said to you before. When I was writing, my story, I never would have imagined in the first place how powerful my story was going to be to the world, and more so to this country that I've been living in for over 35 years, okay? The impact that it has made on society, okay? The relationship, how not just a son was taken from her mother because they were going out to eat and visiting New York City as a tourist, but how another mother was affected by having her son thrown into prison for something that he didn't do. How two mothers were affected in the same way, but two different ways as well. And how all of a sudden the truth of that matter comes out to affect people and be touched in so many different ways. But journalism hurts me so much because my story is constantly being exploited. My story is constantly being showed on cable, on TV, going on 3 years nonstop every single entire week. And how does it hurt? That as much as I want to utilize my story to help people and change their lives and impact so they can raise more awareness and how they need to be more involved in changing laws and changing policies, right? And really reporting the truth, right? I can't put my story to the side. I can't put this behind me. I have to live with it every single day and be reminded of what I went through. But yet, I have to be strong enough. I have to toughen up out here the same way how I had to be strong enough and toughen up when I was in prison in order to live another day in there. But yet, I have to live another day in here by still speaking about my story. And journalism, reminding me of that, hurts. Because journalism wasn't there to help me to begin with. And I'm not speaking in a bitter way. I'm not speaking in hatred. And I say that wholeheartedly because it took me about good 5 years or 4 or 5 years in prison to take that bitterness and hatred and put it behind me in prison in order to want to really focus on the rightful things and of my freedom, of my case. You know, because if I didn't, I would have became another animal or became another person in there just in solitary confinement for many years for just stabbing or cutting someone in the face. Because that's what a lot of people turn into when they allow prison to absorb their lives. And how did I really confirm that? Right before I walked out the courthouse, I reminded myself, in a blink of an eye, it came up to me. All of a sudden, I was going to face all the press. They were there with all the cameras flashing. They were filming me. They were waiting for my mother to receive me because the first person that I was taken away was the first person to receive me as I was coming home, was my mother with her arms open. But right before I stepped out those doors, I had to remind myself, this is the time, Johnny, but you really have to put your hatred and bitterness behind you. You have to finalize this. You have to close this chapter. And that was my moment of confirmation. You know, affirmation reminded me it's gone. You know, so when I tell you right now I have no bitterness and hatred towards journalism, I don't. But it hurts me. It really does. Because when we went on to the beginning of our interview here, it says to show the two sides of how journalism affected me in the beginning. All of a sudden they want to support me and they're so happy for me now. You know, I can in a lot of ways have to look at journalism on a case by case basis because it's sad for me to say that I really can't truly 100% respect all journalists.
Sure.
I can't respect them and I can't trust them. You know, I want to advocate on someone's behalf that is innocent and I know him from prison and I looked into his case. And trust me when I say this, It takes an innocent person to know another innocent person. Only those two individuals have that bond in order to really identify and say, you know what, he's in the same shoes that I am. Because anybody can talk, but it takes a lot more to really, really believe and know that that person's innocent. And I went to court and I spoke in front of the press, on behalf of that person. And I said that if the Manhattan District Attorney's Office thinks that by keeping this individual in prison and standing behind their views on how they prosecute people is making society safer, and how they think that in doing that they're still going to gain society's trust, they're totally wrong. Because it's the other way around. By you not really applying your duties as a district attorney and looking for justice and reporting and investigating the justice that you're disserving to this individual by keeping him in prison, you're losing society's trust. And the same applies to journalists. When you do not investigate and you investigate for the wrong reasons, you're losing society's trust. There's a lot of false news out there. And in my case, it's such a personal matter because my story is so powerful that I'm very, very careful of really, you know, saying who do I trust or want to give an interview to as a journalist.
Sort of interesting even to be doing this podcast form, right? Because we're going to be uploading this conversation we have straight to the web. No editing, no journalistic manipulation of it. And in a way that is freedom of press too, to be able to say, here's my unadulterated story.
That's very important. Because a lot of things are being censored today. I mean, we all understood why censorship came, started out to begin with. I mean, there was a lot of taboos in society. For what reason? Stupid reasons, you know. We want to present ourselves and project ourselves into certain individuals, or we want to belong to certain classes of society, you know, for what? It's not going to make us a better individual. Might make you a better successful individual, might open more doors for you, but at the end of the day, people speak the same way whether they're at their jobs or once they get home, you know, or that's why they have these skeletons in their closets. So it's very good that a lot of things remain uncensored, because the truth needs to be heard regardless who it is, and to be heard in a non-discriminative way, in a non-prejudicial way, and in a non-racist way, because all three are taken into account depending who is listening to the show. The people need to hear the truth, because the truth changes lives, you know. And again, like I said, if a journalist doesn't do that, you know, they're doing it for the wrong reasons. They're just going to hurt lives. And another person in prison can spend 25 years in prison or life in prison for something that he didn't do if a journalist doesn't remain true to the story.
And if a journalist does, man, they can move and change lives, huh? That's the other end of it.
That's the power.
Amazing.
That's the power. That's the power. You know, in a lot of ways, I think the one thing that I will say that I respect about true journalists, the real journalists that are out there, is that they are the true politicians. And I don't want to use the term politicians loosely, because a lot of people use it loosely to the fact that when they think or they hear that word, that term, they say, oh, all people in politics are liars, because they promise, and then when they get elected, they don't really, approve or do what they said they were going to do to begin with. But politicians, for me, is the individual that has the power, okay, to say something about someone else or to say something about what they're going to do and still substantiate it, still prove and fulfill that commitment, accomplish that goal. And that's what I mean about journalism being politicians, because the true journalists have that power to be the political force, the driving force to change public policy today, to change politics today, but they choose not to do so because they choose to side with the politics that are already in existence.
Or fake news, right? Where it's like, man, that has such an influence as well. But it's corruptive. It's not... So it does all really come down to the ethics around how we engage with media and press. And it's a little scary, actually, at times, right?
Well, you know, I'm not the most intelligent person in the world, right?
Oh.
I learn, like I told you, I'm learning something new every single day. And I think I'm grateful for that, because if we go on life without learning something new, then we're losing a lot of life. You know, we're really limiting our intelligence and becoming more stubborn than anything else. And the one thing that I have learned, especially when it comes to business, is that I thought that politics, you know, was the full force drive of everything, that had the power to change anything at any given time. And I kind of realized that's not the case. It's the other way around. The economy dictates politics, you know? And the reasons why we went to war with Iraq, the reasons why we're in Serbia today, the reasons why journalists work for certain companies and write stories in a certain way has a lot to do with the economy. How the economy drives their publishers, their editors, make sure that a certain tone of voice is being represented in the articles that they write. So, you know, this is what I mean, how journalists are politicians. But not the fake journalists, the real journalists, the authentic journalists.
Johnny, we could just go on and on and on, deeper and deeper. Thank you so much. It's, as somebody who's known you for a while, it's a real joy to get to sit down at the table and share conversation around what's important in the world. Your story is profoundly impactful, as you know, as many people have told you, and it's an honor, so thank you.
Listen, Kate, thank you so much for allowing me to use your platform and StoryCorp here to share my story, because again, you know, there are numerous stories out there that I'm sure that you're going to come across and you're going to report to your best ability. But again, you know, taking my story into account, it's very important how you either help someone's life or you destroy someone's life. And my life was destroyed, you know, through the lack of journalism. There was no real journalism in my life, in my story. You know, the notoriety that I had in my life with the case that I was associated is what I'm saying, and the failure, the lack of journalism. So again, I just want to emphasize, you know, the authenticity and the truth that needs to be remained, and the ethics that I was talking about on how journalism needs to truly be reported, because you don't realize how, you know, tables can be turned around when it comes to you, when something is being said about you. And everybody in some time or another has been accused of something, whether you're a journalist or whether you were a kid being raised in your home. So I think that we need to keep that in mind, because you don't realize the power that you have really helping someone's life or destroying it. And if you really truly care about helping someone's life, then you want to do the right thing when it comes to reporting journalism.
And more platforms where people can just tell their story straight from the source, right?
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you so, so much. All right. I'm going to turn this off.